I'm a very confident front runner. I've caddied for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Hello, you're very welcome along to another Golf Weekly. Here we are. We were here last week. Nathan and I were. Hello, Nathan.
How are you?
We apologised to people.
And they were happy with that.
They accepted our apology. Interestingly, Fionn Davenport's here as well.
Hiya.
How are you?
I'm all right.
Fresh off a flight.
Indeed.
Did you hear our apology last week?
I did, yeah. No, I have an issue.
I knew there was a tone when he entered the room.
So do I. So do I.
I
haven't finished introing everything.
Sorry, go on.
You're
go
just
going
to have to work with me here.
Go on.
The issue of Paramount must deal with now importance.
Go ahead.
Okay. You heard our apology last week.
I did.
Some people interpreted our apology as a cry for help.
Oh.
Yeah.
Not me.
No. Our fellow pundit, panelist, did. He heard it and he thought, God, it sounds like there's desperate times there over in Golf Weekly Terrace. Peter Laurie.
Hello, Joe.
You interpreted last week as a plea for help. We need more bodies.
I listened to it and I thought, my God, Golf Weekly listeners should deserve better than that. So here I am to help out as best I can.
It's literally what happened. He got in touch with you and said...
He was sitting out in Luttrell Sound thinking, need to make use of myself over these winter months. Got to keep busy.
Correct.
Little trip into town on a Thursday. Wouldn't do anyone any harm.
Well, listen, it's great to have you because you can add some expertise here too.
See, I'm worried about that, nonsense. To be honest.
No, I mean, look.
Ordinarily, I'd be happy that we get some expert opinion. Mm-hmm. But really on this podcast, having someone who correct us could become an issue.
It will have to be an ongoing rule anytime you're here that if we say something that's incorrect, you don't actually correct us. Otherwise, this won't work.
Maybe you could make a list, and at the end of the podcast, you could then
put in
here's some factual points on what you've just watched. Yeah.
So, Fionn, what was your issue with our apology? Which, by the way, was a critical success.
well, because I heard, I think it was you, Nathan, who said that.
Oh, yeah.
Hang
on, let the man speak.
No, I'd had the idea that we should put out like a little 5-minute pod just reminding, because we haven't been on for quite a while.
Interestingly, it was me who said that, but go on.
Oddly enough, it was me.
No.
I think we liked...
I said Fionn said we
should do an apology. Oh, sorry, yeah. Well, yeah. And then Nathan goes, and Fionn isn't even around.
Yeah,
I'm like, I'm at home in Manchester watching, like procrastinating from work. I'm watching episodes of Property Brothers. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, geez, maybe I'll text the WhatsApp group and see if they're going to do this. And then they can have me up on Skype. Like, it's only 5 minutes. The three of us can do it. I'll be on Skype.
Not to have a production meeting on air, but we only had use of the news studio.
Oh, I
see. It was impossible.
Oh, then, okay, I don't have an issue with it now.
Oh, so we can move on.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've learned, I've changed my mind.
We have a lot to discuss. So we'll start with Ever As Your Tweets. I'm not going to read out the dozens and dozens of tweets calling us various names for not doing the podcast over the last number of weeks. So I'll get to ones that we can deal with. The standout tweet for me of the week was a video Jack Mortlock sent in of him hitting a golf ball, and he said, just spent 3 days at Barn Boogle and Cape Wickham. 2 planes, 3 games, 12 men, most with wives and children at home, and a destroyed liver, hashtag worth it. Do you know, Fionn, this is an unfair test, do you know where Barn Boogle and Cape Wickham is?
No.
They flew to Tasmania.
Wow.
To play their golf.
Wow.
Have you played in Tasmania?
Never.
It was nice. The video was good, so that was impressive.
Was that really your favourite tweet of the week?
Oh, I'm not actually. Will I just... Well,
you can describe it. We didn't retweet it.
No, well...
And it's unwelcomed, because it quite literally popped up in my timeline at work.
In the current climate especially, it's just unacceptable. It's just... We got a tweet, I can't remember his name, we got a tweet which said, my friend... And in quotes, Tiger's playing in 12 days' time. And then Then he had me. And instead of some response back in quotes, he simply had a picture of... And it's like something you'd see in your biology book at school.
Something happy?
A flaccid penis.
Yeah.
And then an erect penis. Yes.
That's right.
Wow. On everyone's computer at work. Yeah. Wow. Open plan office stuff. So that was not my favourite movie.
But in fairness to whoever it is that sent the tweet, as you say, it was taken from a biology...
Yeah.
Book.
It could have been worse.
It was a drawn picture.
Could have been way worse.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but still. So Kevin Kelly, this is what I want to check with you, Peter. So he played the home of the 2018 Irish Open at the weekend, Ballyliffin. He says, it was a beautiful course, great challenge, though I've never lost so many balls. Ballyliffin, have you played?
Yes, I have.
Are we happy with it as a course?
They played a West of Ireland. They actually played a European Tour event on it in 2002.
Right.
Maybe.
Okay.
Very difficult golf course.
How so?
Long, heavy rough, but big, big golf course.
Okay.
Mm.
I was at that event.
Were you?
Yeah. I used to spend a lot of time in Donegal.
Okay.
And friends of mine and I, and we went down, and there was a Scottish player who isn't the player that you might all think it is, another Scottish player.
It's not Monty.
Paul Lawrie.
Someone cheered. Someone said, "Oh, great shot." Paul. And as he walked away, he goes, "Fucking idiots." And we heard him.
Okay. Paul Lawrie.
It was Paul Lawrie. Yeah.
There must be nothing worse.
How often have you got confused for Paul Lawrie?
Oh, many times. Yeah. Many times. And it never actually bothered me. But it bothered him something dreadful.
He didn't like that.
Oh, didn't like it at all. One time we played in Abu Dhabi. And he's standing on the second hole, and he's playing with McGinley at the time. And McGinley had Edinburgh Jimmy, who's the mouth of the south in relation to caddies. And these two gentlemen come along, and one says to the other, "Oh, there's that fellow, Paul Lawrie. He's that young Peter Lawrie's father." So he was either confused with being my dad, or he was confused as Peter. Like Monty wrote a book.
Did he?
Oh yeah, and all throughout the book,
that's Joe's Christmas present sorted.
Paul
anyway.
Lawrie is a Peter Lawrie.
No,
in the book,
really?
Yeah.
Oh God, that wouldn't go down well.
No,
I presume as a pro, there's nothing more irritating than when you've hit a slightly dodgy shot, but the crowd think it's a great shot. You've tinned it, and or caught it fat, and they say, "Great shot."
Yeah. It can be quite annoying. Now I have to
want
to
turn around and say it wasn't a good shot.
Is that worse than the opposite, which we had with Shane Lowry at the Irish Open this year? Remember when we were watching him, and there was a guy randomly sitting behind the 14th tee, like really weird behind the ropes. This one guy, and obviously there's a huge gallery following Lowry around, and he was in really good form. Hits a tee shot that wasn't that bad. He was almost trying to take a shortcut.
Corner, yeah.
Whatever did your man say?
Well, I mean, he was trying to cut the corner, which was right to left, his dog leg left to right, and he probably went too far right. And the guy behind Larry went, "Oh, that's gone way right."
You don't say.
Well, Larry, I think Larry kind of said, I don't need you to tell me.
Yeah, don't need
a running commentary here.
Yeah. That was the line, yeah.
He got really annoyed, didn't he?
It's understandable.
The
I can imagine.
Your man used
it must
was a
be
real
so annoying
error.
To and have someone comment on you.
Obviously, Monty is the recipient of the most infamous amount of crowd abuse, but how do you like... Like, as you're walking from shot to shot, how do you zone out from... Like, because people can say whatever they want, and they might say something that they think is innocuous, but that might really get under your skin. How do you...
It's very difficult. Mm. I think if you're going well in the tournament, you're completely focused and everything's great. If you're going poorly, then you're letting everything annoy you. Like, Monty was probably the worst golfer to play golf with, because you'd always feel that you were in his way.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, he'd ask you to move, and, you know, you might be kind of doing absolutely nothing, and he'd go... Would you stop her? Monty, just get on with it, you know? Mm.
That wasn't a psychological ploy to...
No, not at all, no. No, I remember playing with him, and I played in Wentworth with him. And I held out my shot on the seventh hole, and he didn't talk to me for about six holes because I was doing that little bit better than he was.
Gee, Seve would have eaten him for lunch.
Oh, yeah. I remember just talking about that, about people, you know, harassing other people on the actual golf course. One time... on a putting green, and Sergio's there, and I was over in America, and this guy in the gallery starts shouting at Sergio, shouting at him, and Sergio goes, "Go away, mate, you know what I mean, leave me alone," and he goes, "I'm with you all day."
Oh no.
Yeah. And this was before he'd actually gone out to play.
Oh, no.
So you can just imagine what that was going to be like.
That's hilarious.
You don't just get security.
I was
going
to say, yeah,
no
free country.
Wow.
Ryan Connolly stopped into Hollywood Golf Club and he thought he was about to see the great man Rory McIlroy in action, because there was somebody in Rory's a car space. He took a picture, a car in the car space, Rory McIlroy above it, and he said unfortunately he was told that his dad Jerry uses the car space. So Jerry parks there when he likes. So Mark Sheehan, then, are you getting to Adair Manor in 2018, lads? It's going to be number one. We're going to try.
Well, clearly we're going to try.
We will take any invites going.
We should go down and review it.
You been?
What's the word?
I have. It's absolutely magnificent.
I can't wait. I played it before they did the redesign.
It was magnificent before the redesign, was it? Would you have used this as good?
Oh, way better. Condition-wise, it'll be... And I've never been to Augusta, but the image that I have in my head and what I've seen on television and stuff like that, when I've walked the holes in Adair, it's Augusta-like.
Wow.
It's going to be the best golf course in Europe now.
Okay, well then, clearly.
Wow, really?
I mean, I don't know.
Because part of me was thinking, look, you know, it's a bit of hype going on here. That's fair enough.
I think I know the person who does PR for the hotel.
Yeah?
I got to find that. Yeah, I got to make that
call. I might
call.
Know the odd person. Down.
Yeah. I might make that call pretty sharpish. Yeah.
The owner of Adair kind of owns, you know, Lutrustan as well. So.
Oh, that is true. And obviously, as we're huge fans of Lutrustan.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It stands to reason.
So great. So like, this will be a mecca for Irish golf fans in Ireland. Everyone will have to play the new Adair.
Very much so, yeah.
Wow. Is it going to be Augusta-like exclusive?
I don't know the answer to that question, but I would think so.
Okay.
Like everything has been cleared out. Like you can pretty much see right across the golf course. Previous to that, you know, there was a lot of scrubland and trees, but it's all bark mulch underneath the trees now, and like you won't lose a golf ball.
Oh yeah, okay. That is very good. The bark mulch and the trees is very Augusta. Yeah. And is it difficult? More difficult? Less difficult?
I'd say greens wise, it'll probably be a little bit more difficult.
Okay, more undulations or quicker? Yeah.
But the design is pretty similar. Like, they haven't changed much of the actual physical design of the golf course. They've tweaked a few holes.
Right, okay.
Does the owner have ambitions towards bringing the Ryder Cup to Adair?
I couldn't say for categorically, but looking from the outside in, I would say absolutely, yeah.
Right. A few people, by the way, Desmond Connolly and Martin Scarry, we refer to the podcast Tiger Woods did in the Apology podcast as a small time know-nothing.
Well, no, you did.
Yeah.
And I was making the point that maybe it's not small time anymore if they've got Tiger Woods on it.
Martin Scarry points out this podcast's previous three guests were Tiger Woods, Kyrie Irving, who's tearing up life for the Celtics, and Charles Barkley. So it's actually a massive podcast, the Tiger Woods.
What's the podcast?
Oh, I can't remember the name.
Some little old college radio station.
Oh, right, okay.
Tiger had amazing.
yeah, I got that all wrong. Alan Baines wonders if we're getting caught up in the Tiger excitement again. We'll talk about that. And, Chris Mooney. Well, lads, I'll whisper it quietly. I think you forgot a bit of news last week. Q School and another Irish on tour. He could be a potential guest. Also, if you need a producer, .. Chris, you just wait and see who's on the show later on. And Paul Sweeney sent a nice picture from Sea Point, County Louth. It was a great day for mid-November. # friend of the pod. Sean Hardiman, I hope you enjoyed your break, lads. I hope there's a podcast this week. Serious withdrawals. And then Phil has a picture of the 25 best golf books on Amazon. He's wondering if you recommend any. I couldn't print the full picture of the 25 books. Does anyone want to give a recommendation golf-wise? Any golf book that you...
I think Father and Son or whatever, that one. The one about Tiger, Bill Callan one is brilliant.
That's your one. You always mention that one.
I love that book.
What's Donegan's book on caddying up in Donegal?
Something in a 4-iron.
Four iron to the soul.
Four iron to the soul.
That's an old one though, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a classic.
And then that is a great book.
The Greatest Game Ever Played about the one they made that...
The Mark Frost one.
That's ruined by the movie.
Yeah. Oh, the movie's awful.
Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah. But the book itself, I told you my Mark Frost story, didn't I?
You met him in...
Yeah, I met him in Ojai. I was in California at the beginning of the year. And Mark Frost also wrote or co-wrote with David Lynch, Twin Peaks. And so I'm on the phone talking to him and I'm talking to him about Twin Peaks. And then all of a sudden he's talking about, because he moved to Ojai because he loves playing golf. And in my head I'm going, why do I know this name from somewhere? And then I went, hang on a second. You wrote The Greatest Game Ever Played. And he went, yeah, do you know it? Like, he was really happy.
And you said, it's the greatest book ever written.
Well, I almost. I was like, I love those books. And he was like, no way. And all of a sudden, any talk about Twin Peaks or being, you know, being like this big time Hollywood writer just kind of dissipated. And all he wanted to talk about was golf.
Hey, listen,
it was great.
You have the golf book, you're on a level with
it. No, it's brilliant.
Do you have a golf book that you found good? Would you read them?
No, not really.
Right.
I used to read one. And it was very much, but this is for all the up and coming golfers out there who want to be good at this game, is a book called What to Say When You Talk to Yourself.
Ooh.
Oh yeah.
It's kind of the inner you, and it actually does help. Right. It helped me professionally wise, but yeah.
Bob Rotella-esque, I presume.
Yeah, but not as, like, I've met Bob Rotella and, you know, never meet the, what's the saying, you know what I mean, never meet your heroes or never meet.
Yeah,
but his books are very good.
Did Bob not impress you?
No.
Oh.
No, not as, like anything, I suppose, when I went out on tour initially and I got to play with Ernie Els probably in the first year and I thought, you know, I was going to see this guy and he'd flush every single shot, and he didn't, you know, but that was the impression that I got of these guys. Now, Bob Rotella, when you read his books, they're very, they're brilliantly written, you know what I mean? The substance in them is very good and I'd say one-on-one he's superb, but just as a... an ordinary Joe Soap. He kind of, my image of him was ruined.
All right.
And I'll leave it there.
Okay. As is your right. Interesting. And then finally, Pro V1 Kenobi, who has that's the best name of all the tweeters we have. Pro V1 Kenobi. That's good.
Brilliant.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. He says, a silver lining to Ireland's defeat against Denmark. No Golf Weekly NT hiatus during the summer as at Malloy Joe and at Nathan Murphy don't head off to Russia now. You might still go, will you?
Don't know.
I don't fancy it much.
No, I don't fancy Russia too much now for
especially on your own
5 weeks.
Yeah, so there you go. Pro V1 Kenobi, delighted.
Save ourselves for the Ryder Cup, I think.
You have to go and record some Golf Weekly programming as we leave the tweets behind. Is there anything you want to add on the past few weeks? Anything you saw?
No, I'm just excited for Tiger.
Okay, yeah, well, we all are.
I've no great expectations, but...
Jason Day says that he...
Ah, they're all saying it. They're all saying it. I don't believe any of them.
Neither do I.
I expect them all to be coming out on Sunday week going, that's just like to have a nice, healthy life.
Yeah. Nathan Murphy, we'll let you go.
Thanks, Joe. It's been a pleasure.
Okay. So, as Nathan Murphy departs, he mentioned there Tiger Woods. Maybe I'll start with Tiger Woods. It's Thanksgiving week in the States, so no PGA Tour tournament. They're in Hong Kong on the European Tour. We mentioned this last week. So, Ricky Fowler, who can carry the ball 299 off the tee, I don't know where he was practicing with Woods, but he was asked if Woods is hitting it by him, and he said, oh yeah, he's hitting it right by me. And Tiger has said that since the fusion surgery, which he had in April, he's kind of, it's a different, whole different proposition, and he can't believe his numbers. He's only now realizing how much he was having to hold himself back physically over the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years. So Fowler saying that Woods is now comfortably carrying it over 300 yards off the tee has got everybody very excited ahead of the Hero World Challenge.
No, I'm with Nathan. I'm sorry. I'll tell you why. It's not the disappointment. It's the hope that kills you.
I'm hopeful again.
Stop.
Are you?
Tiger Woods comfortably hitting the ball 310-15 yards and his numbers are all up in his irons and he's feeling healthy. You know, when he recorded this podcast, he was just in after doing a 40-minute bike ride. He was saying the endorphins are high. He's flying. The reps are up. I just think, well, he's not that old. He's actually had a lot of rest over the last number of years. He understands this is his last shot. He's practicing hard, maybe. So I think, yeah. You know, because it's his body that's been letting him down. You go back to 2013. 2013, he won it 5 times. It was a Player of the Year. Mm. And but for hitting the flag at Augusta, he might well have won there. So, you know, I appreciate there have been chipping yips and short game issues and messing with the swing and his body, blah, blah, blah. But ultimately, 2013 onwards, post the scandal, he got back to a level in 2013 where he could contend for majors. And so... if the fusion surgery, this Davis Love-esque surgery, has done the trick, then, I mean, I'm not hopeful he's going to win the Hero World Challenge, but I'm very hopeful about 2018.
Davis Love has just gone and had his hip replaced.
That is a separate issue.
And I'm just saying.
So what is the word?
I don't know.
Okay.
I look at it and I go, right, here's a guy who's been an absolute top of his game. Okay? He's pretty much went into free fall. And now he's working his way back up. He's 42.
Mm-hmm.
He's had a lot of surgery. He, as you said, he's gone through mental issues because that's what the yips are, mental. And also, has he not had kind of a mental proposition with the driver as well, when he couldn't hit it, you know what I mean, near the fairway.
Mm.
So he can be hitting at 300 yards like any long hitter could, but can he hit it in the right direction?
No one asked Ricky that.
And what has he got to fall back on?
Yeah.
You know, this stinger shot is gone out with the Indians, because we don't play golf courses like that anymore. We play golf courses where you have to be like Dustin Johnson and hit it up in the air and carry most of the trouble. Is he going to come back? And now he's up against the likes of Jason Day, Justin Rose, etc. You know, can he win again? Bloody hell, it's not winning. It's never easy to win. But now, can he win on events that, you know, these guys are playing in? Can he beat them on any given week?
You're not so sure.
I'm not so sure. No, I'd have to be doubtful.
Would you? And you know, so the chipping, Yip's been a mental problem. Because he explained it away by saying, it's not that, it's because I'm messing around with my swing and I haven't got enough reps in. You're shaking your head at me.
That's rubbish. A yip is a yip. Whether you practice it or do anything different.
And would you classify what he had that tournament a couple of years ago as yips?
Correct, yeah. Very much so.
So that scar tissue ain't going anywhere?
No.
Is that the aspect of his game you'd worry about more, or would you actually worry about every aspect of his game?
I think he'll get it back to, you know, an exceptionally good player.
Mm.
But, you know, will he beat, you know, the guys who are out there now? The tour and all the tours now have increased massively in depth. You know, there's not just 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 10 guys who can win golf tournaments. Now it's, you know, there's 30 or 40 guys can go into a tournament and win a golf tournament. And mostly they're young guys who are unknowns. And they're not frightened of Tiger Woods.
Exactly. Justin Thomas and John Rahm aren't teeing it up going, ooh, Tiger. John Rahm couldn't care less about Tiger Woods.
No. Mm. He did sort of descend last year into like a tourist attraction. All the young guys had grown up watching Tiger, they just wanted to be able to have said they played with him once.
Mm. And rightfully so. Fear. I mean, he is, you know, he's our generation's Arnold Palmer or Jack Nicklaus. Like, he's the great. I think he's the greatest. And who wouldn't want to tee it up next to him? But like, as Peter says, like, everything that's happened to him, realistically, is he going to contend against DJ, against a field that has Justin Thomas, Dustin Johnson, Jordan Spieth, Jason Day? Like, these guys just on their own are like...
What really worries
and that's
me.
Just only naming four.
What really worries you me there is none of you said Rory McIlroy. That's interesting.
Take that back. Rory, I apologise. I love you.
Well, I am hopeful.
I know, I'd like to be as well. Listen, I think anybody who listens to the pod knows we're huge fans of Tiger Woods. I adore him.
We'll go over to the Hero World Challenge tomorrow, or next week, rather. We'll speak to someone who's on the ground. And see.
And by go over, he means we'll ring somebody who's there and talk to them on the phone.
We will transport the listener to the ground. Yeah. So, yeah, November 30th, next Thursday, Tiger's playing. I mean, look, I don't know how you found them. I know you don't watch a huge amount of golf.
Started back now.
Have you?
Yeah, I've got over that.
Funny, we were just saying last week, we're finding this wraparound season very tough going. Is it doing it for you?
No.
Yeah.
I watched, in fairness, I did watch this weekend. I was rapt attention watching Justin Rose and Shane. But I didn't get to see much of Shane.
That's the tour finale, the European tour. I mean the PGA wraparound season.
Oh, God, no.
It's tough going.
No. They need to revisit it. And Europe needs to do the same thing. They need to have a set schedule. And then there's time off in between rather than, like, it was terrible. Like, the Rolex series finished, you know, last week, Dubai, boom, finished. And the very next week, Hong Kong.
Yeah.
So, and then it's like a watch sponsor of the different week. And it looked dreadful. Like, all of a sudden, you know, Rolex all over one thing. And then a new watch sponsor for a small amount of money in Hong Kong.
Mm.
Very hard to miss something if it doesn't go away.
I know.
Yeah.
I still in my head, I just, from a PGA point of view, I'm waiting for Hawaii.
Yeah.
Like, whatever's on at the moment, I don't have any affinity to it. It's the players, the fields aren't good. They might, I don't know. I mean, I don't know why they're obviously making money.
Well, Spieth's in Australia this week.
Not working,
He's not.
Just like Spieth, Jason Day.
Yeah. For a real small, like the Australian Open, the money, the pot is relatively small, but it was obviously the premier event out there, and Jason Day is pulling in favours. But the fact that they'd go and play that rather than, you know, I'm sure whatever PGA event is on has got double the money pot.
Yeah, there's nothing this week is the one thing.
Or, sorry, because it's well, Thanksgiving today.
I would presume there's plenty of appearance money, no?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course.
Adam Scott skipped it, though, actually. Yeah. They didn't like it. So you mentioned the European Tour finale. Gavin Moynihan's going to be, well, he's on the podcast here. We had him on the show this week, and he's going to be on the European Tour next year. So Gavin Moynihan, I mean, you might know him better than us, Peter, is the thing. So he's 23. He's probably a name a lot of people, golf fans, have been hearing about for a long time, because when he was 17, he won the Irish Amateur Open when he was 17 in 2012. He won it again in 2015. Two Walker Cup appearances, University of Alabama scholarship. He came home in 2013 with homesickness. His coach, Hugh Jackson, I don't know if you knew.
I did, right? Lovely fellow.
Rosie, he dropped dead suddenly on a golf course.
That's right, yeah.
And he coached Gavin all the way up from a kid right through. So, you know, invariably that had a big effect on his game. But so he's kind of refound his game, had a very solid year on the Challenge Tour, and has made it through Q School. So do you know much about Moynihan's game? I hear a short
I do. I played with him. Right. I remember playing with him out in Portmarnock Links, you know. And I think he birdied the first three holes or four holes. And I'm thinking to myself, how am I going to catch this kid? You know what I mean? Like,
was he young?
Because he was very, very good.
Yeah.
Doesn't hit the ball a million miles. But very straight, and gets it around the golf course. Great short game. Reminds me a bit like Manassero, Teo Manassero. Very similar kind of stylish games. I'd be very kind of, if I was managing him, I would kind of tell him, stick with what you got. Don't do a Manassero and try and get extra length and stuff like that. But he's a very good player. Mm. And I think some people get out on tour very quickly and they fall into place and, you know, it's great.
Yeah.
You know, and they can keep on going. Some people get out on tour too quickly and then they fall off the cliff very quickly. You know what I mean? They do very well first or second year and then they just disappear.
Mm.
I think this is good for Gavin because, you know, he's taken a little bit of time. He's had to learn a little bit about himself, especially playing Challenge Tour is always tough. Mm. And he's going to get a few starts. Not as many as he probably thinks on the European Tour next year. And he'll have to do very well in them to keep his card.
Mm. Effectively, he'll have to treat the tournaments he does. He's Category 17 is the official. He'll have to treat them as, I got to go out here and I got to try and win one of these or have a top 10 finish to get an invite into a tournament.
Correct, yeah,
down the road.
Yeah.
So they're almost like cup finals in football.
Mm. He's playing in small money events.
Yeah.
You know, the tour now has gone very lopsided with, you know,
Rolex.
The Rolex events, which are massive, and then you have the small events. And Gavin is going to get into the small events, and he just has to be, as you say, there is cup final. There, he has to do well on them, and he'd be gearing up his game for that.
Yeah.
Is there an added pressure then because of the increasing lopsidedness of the European Tour? So that whereas in the past, once you got your card, you had a few months to kind of ease your way in, that all of a sudden there's this new added pressure on him. He's got to get results pretty quickly.
Very much so. It's a bit like Paul Dunne when he came out. You know what I mean? He had to get the results done quickly. And to be fair to him, he did.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm. He was saying in the interview we'll play later on that, so he was in Alabama for not very long, but he played a lot with Justin Thomas there. And I had to get very used to the fact that Justin Thomas was just hitting the ball a good bit by me. Mm. But it didn't seem to provoke a dive into the black hole of trying to get further. You seem to accept that that's just the way things are. So maybe that's a good attitude. And also the challenge tour, he says, just bomber's heaven. Wide open courses. He said he's actually quite looking forward to getting on the European Tour, where on a lot of courses there might be more of a premium on good, accurate ball striking as opposed to Challenge Tour is grip it and rip it, baby.
Very much so. You take this week, for example, in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
It's it is the easiest, hardest golf course there is out there. It's the shortest course you play all year.
Mm.
But to try and get a score around it, you've got exceptionally grainy greens. You miss a fairway. It's tough to get the ball close to the green, never mind the hole. And then if you miss a green, to try and get it up and down.
Yeah.
So he will do very well around, you know, the likes of Hong Kong, the likes of Switzerland, and a couple of others. But the tour has gone very much, and that's why I'm off it now pretty much, because I was too short. Is it's gone a bit like the Challenge Tour in a way where you have to bomb it out there, and it's a tough long golf courses that they play.
Yeah. So he'll be out there, Gavin Moynihan, which is great, and we'll hear his interview later on in the podcast. You were saying you watched a bit of the finale, Tommy Fleetwood got done in the end.
I mean, obviously,
Shane Lowry's the story, I guess.
Well, Shane definitely, but I thought Rose was going to. Well, it was funny because John Rahm won the tournament, but Rose, like Rose, he looked like he was going to win his third in a row, and had a led by a shot with seven to play, and then bogeys three of the next five. He just
ran out of steam, didn't he?
He just did, yeah. He just looked.
Is that tiredness or tightness?
That's a good question, actually.
I would say mental fatigue. Yeah,
really?
Else.
Yeah. Just shattered.
But he's won two in a row.
Won two, he's back in that position. Yeah. And then maybe he's, I don't know, has he tried to win it or has he just let it happen? The other tournaments, he seemed to just, free flow into it.
Mm. He had a putt in 18, like a big long putt in 18. He needed eagle to overtake Fleetwood. He just, it went past.
Mm.
I think Fleetwood, though, comes across as a very popular winner. Oh, he's brilliant. I think he comes across really well. Seems like a really nice guy.
Do you know how I glance at Peter to get the nod or the shake of the head?
I'm like, is he? What do you know?
Is he an asshole or is he liked? And Peter gave him the nod.
Tommy's a lovely fellow. He's a really nice guy, and himself and his wife now have recently just had a baby. I saw
7 weeks,
And he's a really nice guy. I'd cut his hair, but that's probably about it.
But I like it. It looks all right with the hat.
He lives not that far from where I am. So, and it's so fun. There's a possessiveness in that the northwest of England. Like they like their own.
Yeah. He said one interesting thing at the Irish Open about his recent success, whereby he was saying, I don't know, did he start working with a new coach, or they just stripped things back and had a look at the basics. And at some point last year, he realised it was such a simple thing. He was kicking himself. He said he was aiming to the right of target.
And
therefore was subconsciously either, hooding the club or overdrawing the ball to compensate. Mm. And obviously, so that was the starting point of a whole lot of complicating issues. And it just, it turned out he was aiming the wrong way. And once he fixed that, he had to do a whole lot less work with his hands and everything else. And he did kind of say, it's ridiculous that...
Sometimes
at my level,
sometimes golf is very pernickety like that, and if you get something right, like alignment, as simple as that, all of a sudden it clicks back into place.
Well, I let me say now, I will never practice alignment in my life.
And yet, every coach I've ever had has always preaches the alignment.
I go to a coach, skip the boring stuff, right? Let's get into cocking my wrists.
Yeah.
Did Tommy not change caddy? And he was being advised to take a certain caddy, and he would do wonder for him.
Right.
And Tommy said, "No, I'm actually taking a friend of mine. I want him on the bag. I feel comfortable with him on the bag."
Right.
And his career has just gone that way then.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really risen.
Did you watch any of the precursor to the actual tournament?
I was in here. I didn't even see Lowry's round. I've seen nothing.
Before on the Wednesday night when they did. Oh my God!
Live at the range.
Well, no, it wasn't. It was like they were playing it was a chipping challenge. So 100 yards into the island green.
Oh, I did see this.
In the night. And it was...
with Kirsty Gallagher and...
And invariably, I'm just going, Kirsty, I love you. And never mind any of the golf. Just
who's the guy? Vernon Kay.
Vernon Kay, yeah. And it was... It's a good idea. It's fine. But it was so... There was nobody there. Mm. Every time someone hit a good shot, you hear
I know.
And six people applauding.
I know. And Vernon was bullseye.
Yeah.
And the golfer who'd done it was I really don't care.
I don't care about anything.
The golfers don't care.
To do this.
Yeah.
Let me get
I'm
out
here.
Here
and.
Because
and
it is the one thing that lets it down. So it's razzmatazz, lights, Kirsty all dressed up. Vernon is in his dapper and it's whoa, are we off? Yeah. Out comes a golfer with a mid European accent going.
I'm very happy.
Yeah, no, this is great.
But to be fair to the tour, right, and I have to give them this, and especially Keith Pelly and all the lads there who are working there, they really have tried to promote the tour a whole lot better.
You've got to try something,
With all the fastest hole, hitting it down a runway, a couple of the things, they really have done a good job.
Yeah. The Kirsty interviewed Keith Pelly. And he made it very clear that these are just experiments that they're open. They're open to trying stuff. Yeah. That they're not. They're going to look. We're going to try and make it as popular. We're going to try and bring in as many fans as he wants. And so I'm not scoffing at the thing itself. It just the idea itself was kind of funny. I mean, the part that made me laugh was that Vernon Kay, for every single guy that stepped up to hit like a little bucket of balls, he was going, "Oh, are you going to bring the dance moves to the dance floor later?" And you're going, "Vernon, stop. Just
no golf banter.
Stop."
Yeah. Yeah. So Shane Lowry shot a 63. It's amazing how much polish this has put in a difficult year for him. Like, really amazing. They did it in the right tournament, that's for sure.
Yeah.
He's jumped from 85th in the world to 58th. Mm. Yeah, you jump 27 places like that. And from a Ryder Cup point of view, he suddenly goes to 6th on the European points list and to 8th on the world points list. So, you know, it's gone from a glass half empty year to a glass half full. It's amazing, like that 1 week.
And yet, it doesn't just come out in anywhere.
Yeah.
On the European tour, this is his 6th top 12 from his last 9 events. So he's shown an enormous consistency. Mm. He's played that run in 83 under par, averaging 68.67 around. So on the European Tour, he's absolutely, I won't say dominant, but he is playing superb golf the last while.
Okay.
So it was building up to this.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's due to come into studio in the next couple of weeks, Shane Lowry. So we'll obviously let you know. We have a few more bits to get to. So the Eurasia Cup is on the way, as you know.
Is that like the Sevi? Is that the
what's
Sevi
the date
trophy?
Again, Peter, of the Eurasia Cup?
Oh, haven't a clue.
It's not. I must have.
It's not right on my points list. I have to admit.
Look, I'm not too sure when it's on either. Paul Dunne is on the Eurasia Cup team, as is Tommy Fleetwood, Tyrrell Hatton, Ross Fisher, Matt Fitzpatrick, Rafa Cabrera-Bello. Henrik Stenson's on it, Alex Noren's on it. It's a great team, really. And Paul Casey is going to represent Europe.
Can I just put a number on Paul Dunne's season? This is really impressive. So €1.6 million. Yeah. He's got his place because he finished 16th in the race to Dubai. So he's got slot at the Open and then in all the World Golf Championships for being in the top 20. Like £1.5 million and door open to one major and all the big money events next year.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
He's 25 years old.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah.
I did ask him when we interviewed him after the win recently. It's like, what's it like to see $1 million besides that?
What did he say?
He gave the usual rubbish. No, it's just points. You know, obviously we use money as a metric.
He doesn't get onto his AIB app on his phone just to have a look at
Bank of Ireland. Bank of Ireland. He's sponsored by Bank of Ireland. Get it right.
He doesn't ring the guys at Davies and say.
No, it's like that's what I'd be on my banking app going, just look at it.
Wow.
You wouldn't take a dump without getting your phone out.
No.
Is a fact. But, you know, what can he say? He had to say.
And then in 20 years' time, he'd go, where the fuck did it all go?
Well, yeah, there's that as well.
I once met the drummer of, do you remember that band, The Cult, from the 90s? They were kind of like goth electric rock. Anyway, but I'd met the drummer years after the band had split up. And he was talking about the success that they had, because I was a big fan. They were huge. They had an album, Electric, that was amazing. The Cult. They were unbelievably.
People will know who they are.
Yes.
Okay.
And She Sells Sanctuary is one of their big hits. Like it's anyway. So I met the drummer and I was chatting away and I was talking about like, geez, you guys were just like top of the world for a while. Mm. And he goes, I made $5 million. I had at one point, I looked into my bank account and I had $5 million.
Yeah.
And I have no idea where it's gone.
Wow.
Like he's now like scrubbing around like everybody else.
God damn it.
$5 million in his bank account.
Well done, Paul Dunne. That's pretty amazing stuff. So Eurasia Cup, they'll go well. Alan Shipnuck took a lot of heat from European journalists on Twitter. Like they were basically just tweeting him, calling him an idiot, and saying it was a terrible article. But you know, look, he's putting his neck on the line and making a prediction. The Ryder Cup is dead. You just don't know it yet. He says the young, talented, hungry golfers from the United States, benefiting from the cohesive leadership of the Task Force era, are going to roll to victory in 2018 in Paris. This will be the first American win on European soil in a quarter century. And coming on the heels of an overpowering US win in 16, it'll set the stage for a decade plus of blowouts, sapping the intrigue out of the Ryder Cup. He says it's going to get so lopsided that you can expect future Ryder Cups to have all the dramatic tension of the President's Cup. Mm. He says, yes, Europe did enjoy a dynasty from 2002 to 2014, and the Ryder Cup survived, but there's a key difference. They were the plucky underdogs, and the stateside angst that followed each of those losses only served to heighten the anticipation for the rematches. Goliath repeatedly crushing David underfoot is a tough sell to the masses. Whatever about what it might do to the popularity of the Ryder Cup, is he onto something here? Are we kind of worried that US dominance, now that they seem to have got their pods and their task force and all that stuff together and a genuine kind of momentum, given their talent, is Goliath going to crush David increasingly? Could we be in for a decade of US dominance?
I definitely don't think so.
Right.
If there was and ever a golf course that was going to suit Europe, is Paris National.
Why is that?
Because you have to have played it a lot of times to know its idiosyncrasies. And there's an awful lot of really nail-biting golf shots that you have to hit in it over water. And majority of holes, I could name them first, second, third, there's water on. And then you play the back, you're 9, 10, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. They're all exceptionally difficult holes. And I just think it's that kind of golf course plays into Europe. You don't have to hit it that far there. It's not a bomber's golf course. And most of the Americans now are real bomber type golf players. But even that, we've so much talent coming up in Europe as well. Like how he can say that, they've got themselves sorted when in reality, they're not as close as European golfers are. No, I totally disagree.
A few weeks ago, Nathan and I, we were at a lunch that Paul McGinley was the guest of honour at. And Shipnook's article had just come out that day.
All right.
And so I was at the table with McGinley and Paul made a point and he goes, did any of you read the Shipnook article? And I just read it because someone had mentioned it earlier on. And he echoed exactly what you just said. He was going, first of all, the National de Paris is just, it's set up for a European win, 100%.
Right.
Like, and he made that point. He goes, if you don't know the golf course well, you're going to struggle.
But I wonder how well a Rory McIlroy would know it, or I wonder how well a lot of the global PGA Tour-based European players would know that. I just genuinely, like, how often would McIlroy have played it, really? Any more or less than a lot of the Americans?
He's played it a few times, actually, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And most of the Europeans would have?
Nearly all of them, yeah.
And would playing, say you played it three times, would those 12 rounds give you that big an advantage? Competitive golf?
Yeah, I would have said so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Especially in tournament condition, you know.
Okay.
It's also, I mean, I suspect that, with all respect to Alan Shipnook, who is a very good golf journalist, that we also live in a hyper-competitive world where you gotta make noise to get noticed.
That's true.
And like, there's an article like that is going to have us talking about it, and it's generating a lot of clicks, a lot of positive and negative reviews. So there's a touch of hyperbole to it, and Shipnook knows that.
He does. It's not as punchy if he says, US could do quite well over the next decade.
Yeah, it just doesn't have that same meat. And But it was interesting.
Interesting, Paul. McGinley had read it and was...
Oh, he was really... I was going to say he was annoyed, but he wasn't. He was just like, he just goes, I just think it's rubbish.
Okay.
Like, it's just, first of all, how can you say that? And,
yeah.
You know, given the depth of talent that the Europeans have. I put it to him, just by way of just conversation, that, like, do you think that the fact that the European Tour, like, the very best players, the European Tour is a feeder tour for the PGA Tour, for the very, very top talents.
Mm-hmm.
And whilst the European Tour is adjusting its own requirements so that the top players can still play the PGA Tour and qualify for the Ryder Cup team without having then to kind of curtail their schedules over much. But that, will that make a difference? And he goes, why? Why would it make a difference? And I was like, I don't know. I couldn't think of a good reason.
Mm. Okay. We might try and get Shipnook on the next couple of weeks.
Come here, speaking of controversial, did you see any of this? Hamilton Nolan is this writer who wrote in Splinter News, Ban Golf. Did you hear about this?
No.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, so the Golf Channel are all up in arms about this. So it starts with, the worst people like golf, the worst pastime. There's a certain stereotype of golfers, lazy, wealthy, loud men in ugly clothing, Republicans. The stereotype is accurate. At this statement, I already hear the golf propaganda community rushing into action. Not all golfers are like that, they'll say. Sure.
Though most serial killers are men, Eileen Wuornos managed to murder 7 people in a single year. Something to be celebrated? Golfers believe so. You're like, again, I thought it was quite funny. He goes, he talks about golf. Basically, he says, a soul is a fatal detriment to the enjoyment of golf. Quite a few people are more than happy to forgo the burden of a soul in order to bask in the ability to wear tightless clothing without shame. Golf courses should be planted with thorn bushes and populated with wolves to facilitate rewilding and dissuade re-golfing.
He can write, at least.
I thought it was very funny.
Funny enough, as we get on to our last point to finish up on, anytime golf does come up on off the ball, I do notice like hostility on the text. Oh my God, stop, don't talk about golf. It's the worst sport. And you wouldn't actually get that about many sports. You know, most people listening, except on a general sports show that does about 20 gazillion hours a week, we're going to touch on most sports. Mm-hmm. It's funny, golf is one of the few where if you touch on it, people are like, some people clearly are like, ugh, not golf.
You either love it or hate it, don't you?
It seems to be a bit more.
There's no in between.
Yeah.
But it's also, and I say this,
By the way, though, that doesn't make sense to me, because I would think a lot of people should be like, yeah, I don't really like it, but the majors are good fun.
No.
You know, it seems to inspire a certain, I think it's a class thing.
It's a class thing. It's also, exclusivity, thing. it's white men, yeah. It excludes women, it excludes young people. It's, you know, it's like it's got
but
that.
It's getting away from all that.
100%. But I mean,
Donald Trump's really helping with that.
We're moving on.
Who's the most famous golfer in the world?
Tiger Woods.
Donald Trump.
Oh. It doesn't golf. Look, we've said it a million times. Golf does a poor job of selling itself as a new sport, and it's trying to change. Okay. And we know, like for instance, like this stereotype: the Republicans, the in crappy clothes. He's writing this article about American golf. 74% of all golf courses in America are public golf courses. So he's talking about those. You know, if you spend time at Riviera or one of those, or Mar-a-Lago, I'm sure it's full of dickheads.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, or people who are like the exclusive and cigar smoking, whatever.
The worst stereotype.
Whereas, like, and particularly in Ireland, where every town has a golf course.
Yeah.
Where up until not that long ago, you know, it's not that hard to play a round of golf for 20 quid. Like, you know, so it's. Golf has always been much more democratic.
Here, we're less class-based as well. It's less dramatic.
Well, I don't know. Get a certain golf clubs in Dublin and...
Well, Dublin might be a bit different. Can we finish on this? So the Australian Open is on, as you guys mentioned. So Day is there and Spieth is there. Jeff Ogilvy gave a press conference 2 days ago. He blew up a chance to win this last year. He was really good on that. He was like, you know, he was asked, did you feel like you blew your chance when you hit a drive into the trees in 16? And... he said, you know, whether you think it's right or not that I should be pissy, getting on a plane all depressed, thinking I'd blown a big opportunity. I didn't feel that at all. I walked away thinking, well, I nearly won the Australian Open playing shit. He had played 72 holes minus two. He played 70 holes just hanging on by his fingernails and somehow was in contention. It was a weird week. But where he got really interesting, do you know Ogilvy, by the way? Have you ever met him?
I've met him once or twice, yeah.
He's kind of like the Australian Harrington in terms of how thoughtful he seems to be on the game, you know? So he's 40 now. You should watch it on YouTube. It's like a 28-minute press conference, and you could tell the journalists are all really enjoying it as well because every answer is gold. I could literally play you every single answer. It's amazing. It's so good. So equipment comes up, and I just because you're here, Peter, it's interesting to get your thoughts on this. So we'll play here a little clip. This is Ogilvy. He was asked about the equipment issue because Mike Davis, just this week, the USGA's Mike Davis, said that it was horrible what was happening to older golf courses around the world as a result of the balls that don't produce spin as much and fly much further. So Mike Davis says it's terrible what's happening to golf courses. So Ogilvy jumps in on this kind of point.
For 100 years, we were playing US Opens and Masters effectively on the same court. I mean, the golf had changed a little bit, but maybe Jack hit it 5% further than Bobby Jones or something. I don't know. But now it's 50%. It's just complete nonsense. In the last, my career, it's gone from 300 yards was a massive hit to 300 yards is a short hitter on tour now, like legitimately short. So it's changed, and it's changed the way we play the great golf courses, and that's the crime. It isn't really that the ball goes 400. That's really neither here nor there. It's the fact that the ball going 400 doesn't make Augusta work properly. It just functions completely wrong. Like all the bunkers are wrong. I mean, there are guys currently now who are about to turn pro who are turning pro. There's this kid, Cam Champ, who could drive it on the first hole at Augusta, fly it on the green without even thinking about it. So, like, it's time for the timeout, right, at that point. Because it's... And that's kind of where it's getting to. So as I said, its implementation is going to be quite different, interesting. But it seems like the writing's on the wall. I mean, it's going to happen at some point, I think. And probably it's, for all intents and purposes, if we, it's an opportunity for the manufacturers to make, to stand out again. You know, all the balls are great now. They're amazing. But all of a sudden, it's like kind of square one in a way. It's like, guys, you can show us how good you are again. Because in 10 years' time, they'll get half the distance back because they'll work out how to do it, right? But that'll be fun. And there'll be a new reason to buy the new Titleist because it goes better than the other ones. Their version of this new ball is better than the other version of this ball. So there's actually an opportunity there for everyone. So I think it can work, but it's, as I said, it's the implementation's going to be interesting.
So did you sort of, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but did you almost choke when you heard Brandel Chamblee say we need 8,500-yard courses?
Well, I just think it's, that's such a reactive position. I mean, we do actually need 8,500-yard golf courses if we don't make the ball go shorter. That's kind of what we do. You saw the US Open this year. It was comedy. Like, how far? I mean, Koepka didn't hit more than a 7-iron on the longest course in history. That's one solution, is to have 8,500-yard golf courses. But it doesn't seem like as an easiest, it seems like the other solution would be a little bit easier to get done. But, again, it's one of the arguments you can make, I guess. It's not the one I would make, but...
There we go. It's very thoughtful.
It is, and he's right.
Okay.
But will the RNA or the USGA do anything about it? They are exceptionally slow to do anything. And when they do something, they don't seem to do it enough. Let's take example, you know, the long putter. It was in for, what, 7, 8, 9 years before they actually said, well, oh, God, we better do something about this. And then rather than, you know, saying, right, the smallest club in your bag has to be the putter, they went and let the likes of Bernard Langer, I think Scott McCarron still uses the long putter, that it can't be anchored, but it can just be moved, you know, millimeters away from your chest, and it's not anchored.
And people can still accuse Langer of cheating.
Exactly, which is completely wrong.
Yeah.
But they need to take a stand, and they need to do it quickly, and they need to do it decisively. And they need to do something about the ball, because we don't have that much land anymore to build 8,500-yard golf courses. We need the balls to come back. Like, you know, he's right. Like, you look at St. Andrews. St. Andrews is, you know, not even half the golf course it used to be. Mm. Carnoustie, the same. You know, they just rip them apart.
Mm.
You know, they can carry all the trouble. They carry it out. Like, even this week in Dubai, you know, you see just the long hitters doing well. Mm. Because they can carry... 290 is where the trouble pretty much stops, and then it opens out then.
Mm.
We as a professionals and golf players really need to do something about it.
Mm.
I think you're right. The RNA, they're like the sporting embodiment of that old anecdote that's told about Deng Xiaoping, the Chinese communist leader after Mao, who was asked about could he to assess the effects of the French Revolution, and he went, yeah, it's too early to tell.
Yeah. I thought, it always seems when people have these discussions, one of the first obstacles that is thrown up is that the manufacturers have too much power and there's too much money and too many vested interests, so that'll make it difficult to change the rules. But I thought even Ogilvy's point there was quite interesting, that actually if they view it as an opportunity, then... They might kind of go along with it, that you get the new specifications, and then it's like an arms race again. Who can do the best job with the new specifications? A bit like happens to Formula One every 5-10 years, and different people overtake each other. Because there's probably not much difference between a lot of the balls now. They've kind of perfected them.
But all the equipment manufacturers, like half of them are dying to get rid of the golf equipment off their books. Like TaylorMade was trying to sell. Yeah. Like there's no... They're not making any money.
They must be making money off balls. I can't believe they're not. They don't seem to be, I admit. No. But, you know.
Well, think about how many free golf balls they give away.
Yeah.
Fair point.
You know, like Titleist give away thousands upon thousands. Like when I played every week, I got 4 dozen golf balls in my locker every single week.
Mm-hmm.
No, I wouldn't have gone through 4 dozen, but I got 4
dozen. I would hope not.
Wow. Throw them to the odd kid, hit the odd person in the head with them, etc., etc. Hit a few in the water.
How often would you change ball? Just if you, just out of curiosity.
If there was a scuff on it, you'd change it. A single scuff.
Just anything. Oh, yeah. No, that makes sense. But like, even just by virtue of kind of, right, I want to start every hole with a new ball. No.
Yeah. There's a bit of Scottish in me, so you know, there's no way.
Funny, I'm pretty optimistic that they're going to make a change because it's so glaringly obvious they have to.
Yeah,
but like Jack has been beating this drum for a long time.
I know.
Yeah, he wants to.
But like, if you this kid, have you heard of this kid Ogilvy mentioned?
No.
Okay. So say he comes out in the next year or two. Say he's an amateur next year, and he's playing, and he drives the first green at Augusta. You know, say we get to that point really in the next year or two. In fairness, they will just have to sit down and say, come on. And now, one of the interesting things is whether they change it for amateurs. Like, so say the ball becomes really difficult again and there's lots of spin, the spin rate goes up. I mean, I can barely manage the Pro V1. I can't manage the Pro V1. I'm a hacker. So, like, he was making the point, like, you look at baseball in America, that in Major League Baseball, they use the wooden bats. But at all the amateur levels, all the other levels, it's an aluminium bat. Yeah. Mm. He said if they used an aluminium bat at the pro ranks, it would go 10 stadiums down. It'd make a mockery of the game, whereas the wooden mats are trickier. So, you know, I know people are queasy about separating the game too much from amateur to professional. We like feeling we're playing something approaching the pro game. But, hey, look, if we're all allowed to use the Pro V1 and you guys have to use something more difficult, then I think that's very workable.
But if you had a ball that spun more, mm-hmm. you'd actually hit it straighter.
Explain. Would I not slice it more?
No.
It's
side spin, but actually you were talking about spinning the ball, so the ball rotates in the air, it actually straightens it up.
Oh wow.
Because we're talking there, what's the problem is the ball doesn't actually spin at all, so it actually takes off like a rocket.
Yes,
you know what I mean. So it continues on and keeps on going and going and going. There's nothing actually dragging it down.
So when they hit it flush, it's a bit like you watch football where you can see it a bit more clearly. Like a Paul Scholes volley or strike, the ball mightn't even spin in the air.
It just doesn't move. It just hangs, doesn't it? It just goes.
Yeah, you see the Adidas logo the whole way through.
It's moving. Yeah.
So when a golfer hits it well, the ball's just doing that. There's no spin.
No, there's very little spin.
Right.
There's also, and the PGA. There, you mentioned baseball. They could learn. There is vaguely analogous a story in baseball. 1919. They went to a juiced baseball. Before 1919, the baseball was more loosely wound. Mm. And so there was no home runs. Babe Ruth was this weird outlier because he was hitting, say, for example, whatever it is, he hit 25 home runs in 1918 when teams were hitting a combined total of 8 home runs because the ball just was too loose. And the ball would get dirty. And so they wound it tighter and forced to change every time. And it entered the home... Actually, a player got killed. But it entered the home run era. From 1919 onwards, the game completely transformed. And it was... They calculated that home run sells tickets. So people want to see the ball hit yard. Like, they want to see the ball go out of the park. And it transformed the game just by working on the ball. Mm. And this is in... And I mention it because in the USA... That story is an epic tale of American sports, and it's built into the kind of the pantheon of how American sports develop, and because baseball is America's game. So it's not as if the PGA have a million miles to go, right, we can affect the entire game of golf just by adjusting the golf ball.
Mm. Yeah.
And it just seems like, as you said, Peter, is like, because they're so slow to get to these things.
You know, I think they'll have to get quick here.
Absolutely. You know,
like the Brooks Koepka example, it's kind of at the point now where it's like, come on.
This is boring.
A little bit. Like, I find I'm not watching Dustin Johnson play as much when he's just gone driver wedge.
Yeah.
It's kind of not, there's not much to it.
No.
So we'll see. Funny enough, in baseball, they've juiced the ball again.
Have they juiced it again?
Yeah.
They want more home runs?
Record, it's the social media generation.
Oh.
So they don't want to watch like a long game, they just want to watch some home runs. So now,
your man Aaron Judge, the New York Yankees rookie guy, who hit record
home runs this year. So it's the first time they've got back to the steroid era of the 90s in terms of home runs. So at first, everyone was like, these guys all juicing again, but actually, even though they've denied it, they have juiced the ball, they're getting more home runs.
Can we mention Lexi Thompson before we go?
Oh, yeah, last final one. Is it people would have seen this? It was at the CME Group Tour Championship Sunday. She had you make it 18 inches to go into a playoff. This was the tour
I showed
finale.
It to you, Peter. What do you? I mean, there's foreshortening with the camera, yeah. So yeah. They said 2 feet. It yeah. seemed shorter to me, but
let's give her 2 feet then.
Let's give her two feet.
2 feet's missable.
Not this one. This was like it was a little downhiller. So anyway, so the context here. So the LPGA, they have the Race to the Globe. It's their race to Dubai, and Lexi Thompson won $1 million for yeah. being the best player of the year. But she was online to win. Well, she was 14 under, and she would have gone into a playoff
yeah.
for the actual tour championship, so for the final event. And she had this like absolutely makeable putt. And now I'm going to let you. I mean, as a pro, I let it seemed to me.
Well, what happened, Fionn? Oh,
Peter. Okay. I watched it with you. And,
yeah.
And really, the person that comes to mind is a Doug Saunders.
It's Doug Saunders.
She had a downhill, a fraction left to right. Now, the video footage you showed me was from behind.
Yeah.
Everybody sees Doug Saunders from the side on.
Yeah.
But the left hand really had a little bit of
a
shuffle.
Yeah.
Let's say, and she misses it.
And it looked
like, you know, oh my God.
Is Lexi Thompson in the habit of yipping?
Well, no, she's in the habit of cheating, isn't she?
Oh, my God.
But that was the whole controversy this year.
No, I totally agree with you.
Oh, my God.
But maybe.
That was payback. Karma. Well, what she did, yeah, you're right. Her left hand kind of just opened up.
But she couldn't have been feeling the pressure. Like,
no.
If it was a six-footer, I get how you'd be like, oh. But she couldn't have been under that much pressure.
No, it was a tap-in.
It's a weird one to yip.
It was a tap-in.
Let's call it karma. But look at Simon Dyson. Oh, yeah. Again.
Anyway, so it turned out that then Arya Yutanagarn, the Thai player,
ooh.
I can't pronounce her name.
No one's as interested in that. I'm interested in Thompson.
Hug with her caddy. She was shook. Her caddy gave her a hug. And then the consolation was, so Yutanagarn gets the $500,000 check yeah. for winning the event. And then, as they do in the LPGA Tour, speaking of what Paul Dunne, speaking earlier about Paul Dunne, is a clear box with $1 million in rolled up notes is presented to her.
I know.
Yes. Oh, there's a box and it comes in a helicopter.
Bit trashy, isn't it?
It's a bit, really,
bit trashy. Throw her into the lake with the money as well.
You think almost, and that like she, like, jeez. You know, like Instagram shots
of, she get
on
into
a bed
the box?
Of money. So it comes down and it's on a chain, a box on a chain. The helicopter delivers the box. And the head of the CME Group CEO, yeah. it's like he's giddy with excitement. He's like, oh, and you've got $1 million. And it's just like, oh, God.
Yeah, that,
it's what, so the whole thing is so
I
unedifying.
Just don't get people's problem with golf.
Yeah. I mean, golf's amazing.
It's a lovely
it's not
thing.
Vulgar. It's not yeah. stupid.
Right, we've gone way over time, I think. So we're going to tack on here. This coming up next, you're going to hear our chat with Gavin Moynihan, who you'll be seeing on the European Tour next year. Gavin Moynihan, a huge congrats. You're very welcome to the show. So you came through Q School in the last few days. Everything I hear about Q School is miserable.
Yeah, it's not a great place to be honest. It's, like when you think about it, like one hole can literally dictate your whole next year. So that was basically, not really me per se, but some other lads who had no category or no status next year. So like I had a few starts lined up anyway through my challenge rank anyway. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not a nice place to be, like six rounds, and even you can get the feel of when you're all your day, you can just feel the tension even by all the players. Like it's some players we talked to that normally would and they weren't last week. So it's just pretty grim to be honest.
I can imagine. You needed a top 25 finish. How did you find the pressure or the stress? What effect did it seem to have on you?
Yeah, well, the first 3 or 4 days I was fine. I was just treating it as if I was just in a normal tournament. But then I got myself into a nice position after 4 rounds and just kind of played well on the second last day and held nothing, to be honest. I shot one under and kind of moved back a good few spots. And then even the last day I was 3 under early to move up into nearly the top 12 and then made a few bogeys. And then I was outside the cut then and I made down 2 bogeys. So it was... obviously, in the last hole, I knew I had to get to 13 under to have was any chance. And hit a great drive and a nice forehand to about 20 feet in the par 5. And somehow two-footed, to be honest. Mm. I was about a two-footer and I was just sort of shaking over it.
Is that right? Really? Yeah. Right, okay. Because I saw the four-iron was a beautiful 220-odd yards. I thought you drew it into a left-to-right wind. It's like kind of, you know, a very satisfying shot, I would presume, to hit. And then you're looking at the two-put from the edge of the green, which, you know, anyone who's played golf at any level knows is very easy to make a mess of when you're nervous.
Yeah, no, if it was the second, I was saying to everyone else, if it was the second day, you'd have been, you'd be thinking of holding it all day or else it's just happening. But you know, you have to get out of there with two, you're just like trying to nudge it up there and just try and get it in two.
Yeah. And do you take long over the two-footer for birdie?
No, it's just, no, like actually, it's more the fact walking up to the putt, I was a bit nervous. Once I got over the putt, I was actually not too bad. It was just,
yeah,
I knew I had to, you know, even though it was a 2 foot putt, you make it.
Yeah.
99 out of 100 or 100 out of 100 times, but you just knowing that you'd give myself a chance then. And it was a nervous wait after that. That's who we described. Christopher Bloomstrand has 25 footer.
Mm.
About 40 minutes later to knock all of us out, and thankfully he missed.
Did you? So, yeah, this guy has this putt then, a bit 40,
yeah,
to 45.
Knock all about four, yeah, or five of us on 13 under out. And he,
wow.
Yeah, he should have buried it, to be honest. He was greenside in two and he hit a bad chip and then this putt, so it was, wow. Nervous 40 minutes after he finished. But,
were you on the green watching or on TV or where were you?
No, yeah, I was right in front of the clubhouse, was right in front of the 18, so we saw everything. So it was, it was pretty.
Oh my God. That's just surreal. How can you bear to look?
Yeah, oh yeah.
And it's not really a situation where you want to go high five and everyone suddenly don't go jumping up and down.
No, you're just seeing a song this and I was just. The lad was catching for me there that week and just high five and shake hands and just thank God we got through that.
Yeah. The consequences for such small margins at Q School are just kind of so frightening. So categories get very complicated then. I know you've secured a category 17 tour card for 2018 on the European Tour. In real terms, like in simple terms, what will that mean for you then next year? I know you said you're off to Mauritius in the next couple of days. So what will your life be like over the next couple of months with that category 17 tour card?
Yeah, well, I'm first or second reserve from Mauritius next week, but I should get in.
Yeah.
I'm actually traveling tomorrow night to Dubai for a few days to practice. I haven't played any golf since I've been home, so just get back a bit of practice there and play Joburg the next week. I'm in that one.
Right.
And then I'll obviously the month off then for Christmas and all that. And then South African Open is on Joburg again in mid 10 January. And then I probably won't get into any of the Desert Swing events because there are a lot of the bigger lads who are playing them. So my category probably won't get in. I might get an invite maybe to one of them. Maybe, I don't know yet. Mm. And then I'll be playing, like, I'll be guaranteed all the smaller events. I'll be guaranteed. And then hopefully if you have any decent finishes, like you can move up in your category then. So it's re-ranked every few months.
Right.
So like I'll be guaranteed hopefully about 17 events, 18, and obviously I'd imagine after Irish Open this year, I'll get into that again. And then hopefully maybe odd, maybe Dunhill again, maybe a few of the bigger ones towards mid-end of the season. But it's like any tour. If you play, you get a few results up early, you might push your way in.
Yeah,
or it'd be easier to get a few more invites then, bigger ones. I'm just glad it's been a good year. So I'm just going to play these next two events. Whatever happens, but it's been a good year. So I'll concentrate on that one when it comes to January and see what the schedule looks like.
There's always the chance across those 15, 16, 17 events that you have a great week, shoot out the lights. As you said, you get invites then to other bigger events and then you get momentum, and sport is like that invariably. So because I presume it would be pretty hard just on the 17 events you have to win enough money to be on the order of merit to get your card.
A win or a few top threes and then one. Yeah. So like, you get into a few bigger ones. Those Rolex events are huge, like especially like Irish Open this year. Like, if you finish in the top 15, and then I'd go to Mauritius next week, I'd have to finish in the top two during what I made in the top 15 in Irish Open. So it just shows the difference in the money, really. So, but yeah, as I said, just see how we go early on and then try and push on. And then obviously, if you're playing well, you have a good chance of getting those invites to bigger ones. So, but just enjoy the year. Like, it's like great to get the card and just see where we go. Like, in the goal for the last few years. So after where I started this year with no category anywhere, it's a nice one to say at the end of the year I got my card after, which had been nowhere about 8-9 months ago.
Yeah, amazing. Like, still only 23. You're at the Island Golf Club out in Donabate. Anyone who's played there knows that can be a recipe for a punishing day if your game's not on. Like, we've been hearing your name for a very long time. You won the Irish Amateur Open in 2012. I think you were the youngest winner ever. You were 17 in 2012.
Yeah.
You won it again in 2015. You played Walker Cup twice. I know you were over in Alabama. in college there. So you've kind of been earmarked for a long way back as a future European Tour Irish professional. Did you always feel you were destined to do it, or has this how rocky a road has it been?
When I turned pro, I knew I was good enough. It's just after World Cup, my coach passed away at the end of September, and that kind of was difficult to kind of he's been taught me since I started, so it was a tough loss, to be honest. And last year, I was just struggling with my swing, and the fact he wasn't there anymore, it just kind of affected me a bit mentally and did my swing. So I was a bit lost, to be honest, last year. And then
Hugh Jackson was your coach's name.
Hugh Jackson, right? Yeah. He passed away 2 weeks after World Cup there.
Right.
In 2015. So just lost last year, and then started working with Shane O'Grady. He was up in Blackbush literally about a year ago to the day, nearly, I'd say.
Right.
And ever since then, I've known Shane through the GY panels, Dancer panels, and all that. So, and it was a very easy move, to be honest. We know each other so well. So it was honestly owe a lot to him this year. He's been a great help. He's about four or five things we worked on big time this year, and just very simple things as well. Just simple things like alignment, just kind of simple things in my swing. So they've helped hugely. And then short game has gotten back to my short game. Normally would be my strongest part, and it was bad last year. So I've got that back to where I want it to be. So.
Right.
I owe a lot to him this year. He's helped me a lot.
How much is the fall away in form due to Hugh Jackson's death? Like, is it very hard to go back out and golf anytime soon or practice? Or is it just that you don't have any coach and you are trying and still?
Yeah, and I was just a bit lost with my swing. Like, I was hitting shots and it would feel okay. And then I'd be like, is it go like a pull draw or a pull hook? And I'd be like, where's that coming from? And I just had no idea where my bad shots were coming from.
Whereas before, Hugh would have been able to say to you, well, that was...
Oh, he fixed me in literally about, he had five shots and he had me fixed. Yeah, so it was just that, just simple things, like just little things like that, like he was different, so...
Yeah, well, he would know your game better than anybody else as well, that's the thing. Because did I read before, or hear you say before, that you would often maybe play once a week at the island and he'd go around with you and just give you constant feedback, or is that exaggerated?
Yeah, any time I come home after amateur stuff, we'd play in the island on a Friday morning ground in the buggy, and like if it was a nice day, he'd nearly have a score. He'd want me to shoot, and then he hit about three or four shots in each hole, hitting high draws or low fades, whatever. So it was just simple things like that going home, and just missing that life. So he was a tough loss, to be honest.
I can imagine. That's terrible, because it's not an easy game to figure out on your own.
No,
any standard of player.
No, especially you're out there. Probably if you're playing a decent schedule, you're out there probably 30 weeks a year as well. So, if you're a bit lost, your swing, or not really happy, it can be kind of a lonely. But even other lads out there, you know, it can still be a bit lonely. All right, you're out there for that long, you're away from home and all that. But obviously, this year, if you're playing well, it's obviously a bit easier.
You left Alabama in 2013. I think it was your sophomore year. Homesickness, is that basically it?
It was a few things, a bit of homesickness, just constantly not, I was struggling with form over there for a year and a half. I come home during the summers, come home after my freshman year, and was playing bad all year over there, came back first tournament, I won Scottish Amateur, then I had loads of top fives and tens back in Europe, and then I got back to America and I couldn't be breaking 75s or 60s, and I just didn't know what it was. Like I was over there for one reason. It was to perform the golf team, and it wasn't happening. So I just felt it was pretty much happier coming back home and just playing in the courses and conditions I felt comfortable on. So tough decision there. We had a great team. We Justin Thomas just left before I arrived, and he practiced and playing with him a lot, and then a few other lads who on PGA Tour at the moment. So we had web.com as well. So we had a great team.
Right.
It just didn't work out for me, to be honest. But any lads I tell just go over it. If it works, great. If it doesn't, at least you went and tried it. So it's definitely the place to be. It didn't work for me.
So do you actually think it was the courses themselves, the conditions?
It was more the grasses, and just kind of the grasses was a big thing coming from Lynx course.
Yeah.
Going to like different Bermuda grass and just the rough and around the greens. As I was saying, my short game would be my best part of my game, and just that was hit big time over there, and just I wasn't scoring well. So, but it was a combination, a bit of homesickness, loss in form, and it was just a bit of everything, to be honest. So,
getting to practice with Justin Thomas is a pretty cool experience.
I played him a good bit over there.
Did you?
So he was little money games, and we were over there, and we actually played against myself and Kevin Field, played against the World Cup 2013 the first morning.
Right.
Um, So yeah, it was good. And good and nice to obviously see him was number one in the Martin FedEx Cup. So it's unreal what he's done. Incredible.
Yeah, I mean, he's very much part of that group. The Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler and all those guys seem to be good mates and have fun holidays as well, actually, based on Snapchat. Was it obvious that Justin Thomas was major winner in waiting, or has his success almost slightly surprised you?
Not at all, no. He cleaned up in junior golf. He cleaned up in college. Even his freshman year, he was player of the year. He won about six or seven times.
Right.
Even just playing him, he just knew, like, yeah, he just knew. Obviously, you can't say he's going to win majors, but I knew he was going to win on tour a good bit because, like, he was very impressive then. That was, what, 4 or 5 years ago. So, yeah, it's just one of them lads where it's like Rory nearly.
Right.
He just knew Rory's going to be just one of them lads who's just going to clean up nearly. So.
And what's the best part of Thomas's game? Ball striking or short game?
He's very impressive how far he drives it for the size of him. But his short game, I think, is very underrated.
Right.
A lot of people don't realise how good a short game is. It's unbelievable.
Right.
But for the size of him, the distances he hits is incredible. Like, he'd be the same size as me, and he'd be 30 past me, no problem.
Right. So how do you feel your game is going to stack up at European Tour level? And I ask this full in the knowledge that, for instance, at the Irish Open, you caught a lot of attention by finishing tied for 14th. So that would give you huge confidence. But week in, week out, dealing with the cut line, dealing with the crowds, dealing with pressure, dealing with different hotels and travelling around, all of that kind of stuff. What do you think you're looking forward to? What do you think is going to be a challenge?
I'm actually can't wait, to be honest, because a lot of the Challenge Tour courses are... Not that they're easy, but they just don't reward good ball striking, I don't think, anyway, because a lot of them are off the tee or very generous. For European Tour, well, the events I've played, they've really, really emphasised a good driving. So that's where I feel, I think it's a very good thing. So, and that's why I can't wait to get going, because the scoring is not where it's always around maybe 12 to 16 under the wins on main tour, but on Challenge Tour, it's always from 16 to about 24. I think I have a good chance if I drive the ball like I have been. My putting is a bit inconsistent, but if I, on my good weeks, I am streaky now. So, but in pro golf, you have to take advantage of your good weeks. So a good week has to be a top three nearly, so to bump up the rankings. But I think it'll suit me. The events I've played, like I played two this year, I played Irish Open, and I didn't play my best at Dunhill, and I finished top 45. So I'm looking forward to it. So.
Because that's interesting about the Challenge Tour, because I have heard that from one or two other fellas out there, that it's way too wide, it's way too generous. It basically just becomes a bomber's course. Who can bomb it the furthest?
Time, yeah. Even this year, I think only about the top 15 last year, I think only about six kept their cards, maybe.
Yeah.
At most. So it just shows, like, even if you get your card off Challenge Tour, it doesn't mean you're going to walk straight into the main tour and do well. So that's why main tour just shows you that it is ball striking, it is keeping it in play, and your short game has to be very, very good. So even Dunner, I've talked to Dunner a good bit the last while, last year even, he was saying, it does reward good ball striking. You have to keep it in play, and just like 2 or 3 under is a good round. Take a 2 or 3 under each round, that's a 10, 12 under, you'll be up top 10 every week.
Top 10 every week, you'll do just fine.
Fine, yeah.
Things will look after themselves. And so you're clearly friendly with Paul Dunn, Dunner, Shane Lowry, I presume you know reasonably. Are you close with all those guys?
Both of them in Irish Open and Dunhill. We play with Harrington as well on Dunhill. We had a nice little game that day.
Right.
I know all the boys. I'll be heading over to Dubai tomorrow to practice in the Elves Club. I think Darren Clark's there at the moment for a week, so I'll probably pump into him for hopefully get a game maybe Friday or Saturday. But I know all the lads. Just probably, I don't see Rory as much because he's always away, but... last year in the K Club, he was very nice to me every day. He came up to me and asked me how I got on, how I was playing, and all that. So, I know all the Irish lads are all great lads. So.
That must be a huge thing going out there, that you can glance at the entry sheet, you see one or two Irish names for any event you're playing at over the next year, and you kind of think, grand, I've got someone for lunch, I've got someone for dinner. That's just going to make the whole time away from the course move a whole lot quicker. It's one of the big things to deal with when you first go on tour, for sure.
Oh, it is, yeah, because there's nothing worse when you're... Yeah, nothing worse than if you're over and you don't know, and you just kind of, the weeks do, like, honestly, I can't believe this year is already over nearly, because I remember starting off in April, the weeks fly by, because the good crew was out on the Challenge Tour, and like, the weeks fly, you know, honestly, so it'd be nice now to see Dunner next year, and at a good few of the events, and room with him, have dinner with him, and have the practice rounds, and money games, whatever, on the course, and so, and obviously, when then Larry and Harrington are playing the same events as well, it'd be nice to meet up with them as well, so, and there's always good crew of Irish out there, so.
Great.
looking forward to the whole new experience, to be honest.
It sounds exactly like the right attitude. So you're 23, you're going on the European tour. It's disgusting. It makes me sick. It's awful. Do you need a caddy? I'll be your caddy. No problem. That's a long silence and a no.
No.
Do you have a caddy as a matter of interest?
Yeah, actually, the last, when I was in Dubai 3 weeks ago for the, it was the second last challenge tour event. And I finished fourth there, and then I played in Oman. I picked him up in Dubai, Scottish guy, youngish guy, and he's caddied for a good few, three or four of the challenge tour lads this year.
Right.
I just happened to be paired with them lads a lot during the year and just got to know Stuart Davidson's the same, so. He's been a good help the last few weeks. He played last week in Q School, so he'll be on the bag for the next while, I'd say, anyway. So we know he's good.
Very good.
Going well.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's coming down to Mauritius and Joburg now in the next 2 weeks to me. So
okay.
So yeah, see how we go.
Great. Congrats. It's a ridiculous achievement to get on tour. I mean, like you're creme de la creme here. So we hope it goes well. We'll keep an eye out for you for sure, and we might check in at a couple of stages across the season, Gavin.
Perfect. Thanks very much.
There you go. Good to hear from Gavin Moynihan. So, lads, we're done. Peter, thanks for coming in.
Pleasure, as always.
Yeah, you saved the pod. You know. And
you never know.
That's good. You're always welcome. We might do a few from Skype via Skype in our new studio. And Fionn, thank you as ever.
Thanks, Joe.
All my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here. Starter kit right here.